Let's start in Genesis chapter 13. Genesis 13, we've been studying the beginnings of God's people, God's will, God's promises. They're fresh in our mind. We're looking at some of those applications we can make from that. We're going to do that this morning. Glad you're here. Vish is with us. Glad that you've come to be with us. Those up in the front might not know. Dorothy McCrory snuck in here right at the last thing. First time she's been able to be with us in a good while. It's really good to see her out and being able to leave the home. We studied last year, I guess it was, the 2021 year. We went about once a month or so. We looked at a lot of issues concerning families, various responsibilities, relationships, and so on. While we were doing that, how nice would it have been if there was just a book in the Bible dedicated to that very thing? So it talked about. It just talked about parenting, talked about child rearing. It talked about all the things that come up with raising children. How nice would that be if there was a book in the Bible that dealt with curfews, a book in the Bible that dealt with dating, the whole shebang of parenting. What if there was a book that did that? Would you like there to have been some specific information about maybe how Jesse raised a son like David? Would you like a little bit of, in Luke chapter 1, we meet Zacharias and Elizabeth, and we see John born. The next time we see him, he's roughly 30 years old. Would you like to have seen some of the things that went on in their house to raise a son like John? Would those things be nice? Yeah, they would be nice. It'd be nice to have a comprehensive account to go into all of that stuff. And we don't have that. But we have a lot. And we have a lot of situations where we can learn good and bad about those things. And what I want to look at today are two different fathers that we get, two examples. We're going to look at Lot and we're going to look at Noah. We just studied them both. We studied those families. We met Noah at the end of chapter 5 and from chapter 5, the end of chapter 5 up through basically chapter 10 is Noah. We meet Lot early on when Abraham came to Judah, to the Judean area. But chapter 19 is pretty much dedicated to him and his family. So we have some information about them. There's a lot of really, really easy comparisons when you look at those two men. They both lived around evil surroundings. It says Noah that he lived during a time when all thoughts were evil, pretty much constantly. God destroyed that world. Lot lived where sin was rampant. It was called it's described as grievous sin. God destroyed that area, those cities. And yet in the midst of all that, they both are, by the Holy Spirit itself, they're called righteous men. Both are called that. They were both saved from that catastrophe. The world destroyed, but not Noah. Cities destroyed, but not Lot. So yeah, there's some really easy things to look at. We can see some similarities there. But it's the other stuff. It's when you leave the specific patriarch and then go to children. You just go to the broadening out of the family. You do see some differences. And in those differences, there are some pretty easy answers of what could have led to such differences. So that's what we're going to look at today. Looking at two different fathers that were righteous in and of themselves. But there's some things we can learn from both of them. So let's talk about some applications. And the first thing is the application is the impact that decisions have, not just on ourselves, but on others. We meet Lot in chapter 13. He's a part of that caravan that came with Abraham from the Ur of the Chaldees to the land that he was told to go to. He'd never seen it, had no idea where he was going. He just went because he's a faithful man. Lot was a part of that traveling family. And once they got to the land, God continued to bless them. They're just blessed out of their ears. Brent talked this morning. Abraham was an incredibly rich man in physical possessions. And it was to the point they can't find enough pasture. And if they could find enough pasture, the servants on both sides, Lot's servants and Abraham's servants, they start going head to head. They wanted the choice lots. And it's like World War III is breaking out every time it's time to feed the herds. And Abraham says, no, we're not doing this. No, we are family. We are brothers. And this is not happening. And then Abraham, the gracious man that he is, here's what we're going to do. We're going to separate right here. And you get to decide who goes where. I give you the choice. Pick up with me in chapter 13. Look in verse 10. Lot lifted up his eyes, and behold, all the plain of Jordan. It was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. Even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt as it came out of Zoar. And Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan. He journeyed east. They separated themselves one from the other. You get to pick. And so Lot just scans the view. Sees a bunch of green over here. A lot of water. A lot of pasture. A lot of opportunity. And off he goes. You know, physically, that's a perfect choice. That is, if what you are primarily concerned about is physical things and physical blessings and the continuation of those, well, that's a really good choice. On the surface, it seems like a perfect choice. Look in verse 12. Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan. Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain. And pitched his tent as far as Sodom, but the men of Sodom were wicked sinners before the Lord exceedingly. And he never gave that consideration. When it came time to choose, where am I going? Where am I leading my family? What type area am I going to put my wife in? And where am I going to raise my kids? All he saw was green grass. What's going to happen to my children's morals? All he saw was plains and water and fields. That's a decision that he made. Mark your spot, because we're coming right back. But turn to 2 Peter chapter 2. It's interesting that Peter puts Lot and Noah together. As he starts making application, here they are. I mean, they're right there in Genesis somewhat together. And then Peter, when he starts teaching, he uses both of these men back to back to teach. 2 Peter chapter 2, look in verse 5. It says, God did not spare the old world, but saved Noah, the eighth person, a preacher of righteousness. So he talks about Noah during the time frame that he lived, the evilness that he lived in, and yet righteous man. Drop down to verse 7. Just pick him up in verse 6. He turned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes and condemned them with an overthrow, making them an example to those that should live ungodly, and delivered, rescued, just Lot, righteous Lot, sore distressed with the filthy, lascivious life of the wicked. For that righteous man, living among them, seeing and hearing. The O King James uses the word vexed. We don't use that word. The idea is tormented. It tormented his righteous soul from day to day with their unrighteous deeds. Lot never accepted the unrighteousness. He never accepted the sin. He hated it. Day by day, it says, tormented on his insides when he saw and heard and personally disgusted by the culture. Hated living in the midst of all of that stuff. But he kept his family right there. As much as he was disgusted, as much as he hated it, as much as he was tormented by it, he kept them there. Go back to Genesis. We can't be finite about this. But boy, we don't have to be. Turn to chapter 18. I'm sorry. No, that's not right. Turn to chapter 16. Now, while you're turning there, I'm going to give you some background. In Genesis 12, when we meet Abram, he's 75 years old. 75 years old. We just read out of Genesis 13. I don't know how long they've been there. But they're in the early phases of it. Whether that was a few months, whether it could have been as many as a few years. We don't know that. But they come there in chapter 12. In chapter 13, Lot has pitched his tent to a place that daily torments him. But he doesn't leave. And then the calendar does what the calendar does. It starts flying by in the blink of an eye. Look in chapter 16. Look at the very last verse. Verse 16:16. By this point, when Ishmael was born, Abraham is now 86 years old. By chapter 16, 11 years have passed. Turn to chapter 19. Chapter 19. This is when God comes to Abraham somewhat in disguise, and Abraham shows hospitality to him. At some point, he realizes who God is. There's a conversation that takes place. But look what was said in verse 10. And I'm sorry, I put you in chapter 19. Actually, chapter 18. I've got you in the wrong chapter. Chapter 18, verse 10. When he starts talking about the seed is not going to come just through you, Abraham. It's going to come through Sarah. Sarah will have a child. Look in verse 10. He said, I will certainly return to you according to the time of life, and lo, Sarah will have a child. Sarah, your wife, will have a son. The old King James, I will come back to you in the time of life. The newer versions have made some sense out of that. This time next year. What he basically just told him was, Abraham, a year from now, 12 months from now, Sarah's going to have a son. Do you remember how old Abraham was when Isaac was born? He was 100. What would the year before, when this conversation took place, he's 99. He came here at 75. They separated not too awfully long after that. To say that Lot has been in Sodom 20 years? That's probably getting close. He hated it and spent 2 decades there. He's tormented by it daily and spent 20 years roughly. And here's the sad thing. As much as he hated it, but yet he's still vexing his righteous soul every day. Evidently his wife wasn't all that vexed. Evidently his children just weren't all that tormented. He made a decision that had an impact. In chapter 19, verse 14, when the angels have said, look, we got to go. This city is about to go. You got to get out of here. Well, Lot does what me and you would do. He went and rounded up his family. He wanted to go get everybody that he loved. And in verse 14, he went out and spoke to his sons-in-law, plural, S on the end, sons-in-law, who had married his daughters, plural. And he said, get out of this place. The Lord will destroy it. They mocked him. Look in verse 15. When the morning arose, the angels hastened Lot and said, arise, take your wife and your two daughters, plural, which are here. You know what that means? The man's got at least four daughters. That's what it means. He had sons-in-laws and daughters that weren't at home with him. And he went to try to get him. And they thought he was a buffoon. He comes back. And it talks about daughters, plural, with him, still in the house, whom he had prior tried to offer his unmarried maidens to rapists. Two daughters at home, minimum of two daughters who are married. And those daughters were all impacted. You know the story. Those daughters changed because of what happened being raised in such an evil place. That's the impact of a decision. In verse 26, as you well know, his wife looked back from behind him and became a pillar of salt. That's all the text it says. That's all that Moses, by inspiration, wrote to us. But in Luke 17, Jesus used her as an example. And in that example, for the life of that example, when you try to put that into context, it seems to be Jesus was saying there was something pulling her back. Maybe she didn't want to let go. The daughters were impacted. At least by inference, it seems to be that the wife was impacted. The daughter's purity, the ones who survived it, their purity was certainly impacted. Because we know what happened to them up on that mountainside. Here's some wine. Let's get Dad drunk and let's take it. Wonder where they would have ever thought of something like that. Oh. Where were they raised? Where'd they spend the bulk of their childhood, if not all of their childhood? His choice impacted people besides him. You remember during the conquest period, Achan made a choice in the city of Ai. He's not the only one who suffered. Lot has made a choice that he, through some incredible strength of righteousness, was able to stand through a little bit. But nobody else that went with him did. The point is, parents, we make choices, and our kids are a part of those. They're not a part of what the choice is. We might not set them down and say, here's what we're thinking. What do you think? Sometimes we make the choices and they just have to go where we go, right? Sometimes where we go with them, not the best of decisions. Here's an example of that. And the sad thing is his choice is being made by innumerable families still to this day. Parents, dads, choosing grassy plains, choosing watery fields. And they're not really worried about the consequences of what that might do with our children. We make choices about school. We make choices about jobs. We make choices about marriages. We make choices about moves. Let me give you a real quick scenario. A man who moved his family to another place because it was a really big promotion, really big increase in pay, a big increase in title. Found out after he got there, it wasn't a local church to be found. Not a local church in driving distance. And you're sitting here thinking, well, shouldn't that have been a part of the decision before? Yeah. You would think. Would it surprise you that man I'm talking about is now divorced from his wife? Would it surprise you that those children... No, that doesn't surprise you. You probably expected it. You can make some terrible choices. And then consequences come from those choices. And we sell the soul to the company, and we're like Lot, just choosing grassier grounds. Our decisions impact more than us, is the point. Now let me just make a real quick application, because we're so early on in this Bible period that we've started. Roughly, what, a month and a half in? Daddy? Mama? If your choice, if your decision is to be half-hearted about getting your children to these Bible classes, why don't you rethink that choice? Because that's a choice you are making that's impacting them, and it's going to impact them a long time. Here's an opportunity for them, while young, to get a good grip of how this big 1,500-page book fits together. Let's be honest. There are adults in this room who don't know how the book fits together. And here's an opportunity to get a handle of that, to have a better understanding than we've ever had before. Don't let your choice be to get them here half the time. Don't let your choice be to just get them here on Sunday morning. Your choice is going to impact more than one. Not just yourself. And it could impact for decades. Decisions you're making now can impact years down the road. That's a quick aside. But they have impacts are coming. Decisions are made, and there are consequences to those. But not just decisions, what about just faith? Look in Genesis 19. Genesis 19. Lot here, it's just mind-blowing. Some of the things that he did. We know from inspiration, he's a righteous man who's being vexed. Yeah, but he didn't get out pure either. And he didn't get out clean either. In chapter 19, you know, you don't see him as an example of monumental faith. You just don't. In verse 8, as one who has a daughter, I don't even know what to do with this. When the men of Sodom showed up to take what they thought was just two strangers. Now it was angels, we know. They didn't know that. They just tossed two strangers in town and they won them. And in verse 8, Lot says, I have two daughters which have never been known to man. Let me give them to you and you do with them what you want. Daddy here with a girl? You fixed to offer up your daughter to a city full of rapists whom you know are so immoral that every day it vexes your soul? And yet, look in verse 16. Actually, drop back into verse 15 that we read earlier. When the morning arose, the angels hastened Lot. Hey, let's go. They hastened Lot. Arise, take your wife and your daughters. It's time to go. Verse 16. And while he lingered, the old King James says, I think New Orleans used the word hesitated, waited. While he lingered, the men, the angels, they laid hold on his hand and on the hand of his wife and on the hand of his two daughters. It's time to go. It's time to go. Let's go. They finally grab him. I don't know what's going through his head. I don't know what the lingering is about. We can guess maybe. But again, not exactly a sign of just this incredible rock-hard faith right now, huh? He's offered up his daughter. He keeps waiting and he keeps waiting and he keeps waiting. Finally, they're gone. Look in verse 19. They are told, they're told in verse 7, you keep going. Go to that mountain. Look in verse 19. Actually, verse 18. Lot said, oh no, my Lord. Behold, your servant has found grace in your sight that you have magnified your mercy, which you have shown to me in saving my life. I cannot escape to the mountain. Lest some evil take me and I die. Oh no. That's a little bit too far. I don't think I can get that far. You know, this fire and this ash, I think it'll catch up to me before then. Oh, you saved me. Thank you for saving me. Thank you for your mercy. But you're asking too much of me. So you got this fear. For lack of a better word, that's what that is. Fear, lack of faith, lack of trust, whatever you want to call it. Now go back to chapter 7. Let's talk about Noah just a minute. Noah spent, if we're putting the puzzle together correctly, roughly 120 years building the ark. You know, a football field and a half or whatever it was. It was a big undertaking. Over 100 years he's building. Peter called him a preacher of righteousness. So he wasn't just an ark builder. He's not just a boat builder. He's preaching during this time. Can you imagine what the sermons would have been? What are you doing? What are you building? What is this thing? And Jehovah God himself has come and told me what's going to happen. This is going to happen. And the only ones who's going to survive are the ones who are in this thing that I'm building. And they would... You think Lot's son-in-laws mocked him? Could you imagine what Noah went through? Because he's talking about something that to them are just absolutely unimaginable. Now, it's unimaginable possibly on two realms. If you go, here's what we know. In Genesis 2, while the Garden of Eden was still intact, there was no rain falling from above. Everything was being watered from below. Now, did that end with the garden? We don't know. But at that point, rain from above wasn't even something they would have understood. If that ended in the garden and rain did begin to fall, it's still something unimaginable because there's never been a flood that would have destroyed everything. So they still can't picture in their head, what are you talking about? We've never seen anything like this. So whether they've never seen rain or whether they've never seen whatever it is they've never seen. And they don't believe. And they begin to ridicule. And yet here's Noah, just constant. His sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, would have seen complete trust. Could you imagine the example he just set for his sons? Everybody's making fun of Dad. Sons, we'll do what the Lord says. Laughing stock of the area. This is what the Lord said. This is what we will do. You've got Lot, who can't get some of his family out. The ones he does get out had to be handheld, basically, with so much attraction still. And here's Lot, or Noah rather. When he goes in, his family goes with him. You talk about an example of active, trusting, obedient faith having an impact. Noah made a decision. And his decision impacted others as well. And then the unimaginable happened. Look in chapter 7, verse 11. 600 year of Noah's life, second month, 17th day of the month. The same day were all the fountains of the great deep broken up and the windows of heaven opened. There's water coming from every direction, in other words. The water from the deep, water from above. It happened exactly like Noah said it was going to happen. And the family was there together. I heard somebody say one time, I don't, maybe they were joking, I don't know. They said, Noah preached 120 years and he saved nobody but his family. Give me the contract. I'll sign it right now. Would you join in on that? Save nobody but his family. God help us to save our family. In an evil world, he was able to do that. We're going to make fun of him because his family was obedient. Because his family trusted and feared the Creator. Is it any wonder the family didn't follow Lot's lead when he's offering up daughters to rapists? And he himself waiting and lingering. And then you've got Noah, a complete contrast to that. Tell me what to do. Okay, that's what I'll do. And the others might not have seen that, but his family did. And if we do anything but praise that, we've lost our minds. What a wonderful example and impact that he had. And here, back to the decisions that we make as parents. Here's what's coming, Mom and Dad, if it hadn't already come. Your kids are going to recognize your decisions one of these days. And when they're 2 and 3 and 5 and 7, they just go where you go. They'll be here as much as you bring them. A 3-year-old's not coming on their own. They'll be here as much as you get them here. A 10-year-old's going to be here as much as you get them here. And then we make decisions. And the day will come when they will recognize what those decisions are. He knew we never miss football practice. And we never go to Wednesday night Bible study. We never miss band camp. But we never go to gospel meetings. We never miss this. But they will see it in time. And when that time comes, the charade of God being the most important thing in our life is over for you. they'll recognize the charade that it is. We're not just making decisions. We're making decisions that impact others. And we're not just making decisions in a box. No, they're going to be not clear to all eventually. Let me give you one more. What about the need of just constantly needing to guard our character? You remember what happened in Noah in chapter 9? The flood is over. They get back to living. They get back to planning. They get back to life. And then Noah makes that decision of becoming drunk, which impacts decisions that his sons make, which just shows us, again, people are watching. People are aware. You got the example of Lot and his character, this constant just seesaw. And so the real quick point is, we can't ever let our guard down. We can't ever just be unaware that people are watching, that people see. And then to take us back to point number one, people are impacted. So you look at these two examples. These two families, incredible. I mean, in a book full of incredible events, the flood and Sodom and Gomorrah, right? Even in a book full of stuff that's just kind of mind-blowing, they're up at the top of the list. Those are big events. And we're getting to see a person in the middle of them both, making decisions. Some of those decisions were good. Some of those decisions were bad. So we can take what's good and we can take what's bad and we can put it in our own life, and hopefully our decisions will be a little bit better, because we owe that to our God. We owe it to God. We owe it to our family. Make decisions based on spiritual realms, because it's a lie to say we only live once. We owe it to God and we owe it to our families to make sure that we set this example, to live a life of obedient trust and faith. And we owe it to God, we owe it to our families to constantly be aware, if that's not the right word, but just mindful of the character that we're supposed to have. Get our song books out. Now, the Bible doesn't have a book on child rearing. We can't just turn to the book of family, chapter 5, and figure out everything there is to know about how to handle it. But we have a lot of examples of good parenting. We have a lot of examples of bad parenting, and we have a lot of examples of righteous people raising righteous kids in an evil time period. And we can do the same thing today, and don't let anybody tell you different. We are not going to live our life as pessimists and think that we can't train our children to be everything God wants them to be. We can be everything. So there's our invitation. If you're not a Christian, there is life after this. But as we talked about earlier, you can't live in Christ without first having died to Him. You have to die with Him. You have to be buried with Him. You have to be raised with Him. So if there's anybody here who knows who Jesus is, you know that by faith. But you've never confessed Him as your King. You've never confessed Him as your Lord. Never confessed Him as the Son of God. Never repented of the sins that caused Him to have to die in the first place. And you've never been baptized to wash those sins away. Do that. Why don't we do that today? Those of us that are Christians, maybe we've been on that seesaw that Lot was on. Maybe we've been busy chasing a hat across an interstate, putting our very soul in danger for something that just doesn't matter. But we can fix it today, and we ask that you do. While we stand and sing.